History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Thank you. Good morning. I will be pouring libation this morning. Libation is a ritual that honors and remembers ancestors. It is not a prayer. It is a call and response ritual. So during the libation, I will be calling on our ancestors to come and be with us. And I will say, ancestors, come and get your drink. Your response would be to say, Ashe, Ishe, Amen. Or as my friend Teju Olaboni says, all right. I'll start. Ingu Oladamare Jenyami Olarun God Jehovah Allah Amen Ra, the many names for the original ancestor. The ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our requests will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say, libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxies, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today, to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity, to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listenings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is done.
Why should the black man in America concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300 or 400 years. Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one, first you have to realize that up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungles, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And when, and naturally, it was so negative until you, it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, and much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself, and a negative attitude toward Africa at the same time. To the same degree that your attitude, that your understanding of an attitude toward Africa becomes positive, you'll find that your understanding of and your attitude toward yourself will also become positive. And this is what the white man knows. So they very skillfully made you and me hate our African identity, our African characteristics. And you know yourself that we have been a people who hated our African characteristics. We hated our hair. We hated the shape of our nose. We wanted one of those long, dog-like noses, you know. Yeah. We hated the color of our skin. Hated the blood of Africa that was in our veins. And in hating our features and our skin and our blood, why, we had to end up hating ourselves. And we hated ourselves. Our color became, to us, a chain. We felt that it was holding us back. Our color became to us like a prison, which we felt was keeping us confined, not letting us go this way or that way. And we felt that all of these restrictions were based solely upon our color, and the psychological reaction to that would have to be that as long as we felt imprisoned or chained or trapped by black skin, black features, and black blood, that skin and those features and that blood that was holding us back automatically had to become hateful to us. And it became hateful to us. It made us feel inferior. It made us feel inadequate. It made us feel helpless. And when we fell victim to this feeling of inadequacy or inferiority or helplessness, we turned to somebody else to show us the way. We didn't have confidence in another black man to show us the way, or black people to show us the way. In those days, we didn't. We didn't think a black man could do anything but play some horn, you know, some sound, and make you happy with some songs, and in that way. In serious things, where our food, clothing, and shelter was concerned, and our education was concerned, we turned to the man. We never thought in terms of bringing these things into existence for ourselves. We never thought in terms of doing things for ourselves, because we felt helpless. And what made us feel helpless was our hatred for ourselves. One of the things that made the Black Muslim movement grow was its emphasis upon things African. This was the secret to the growth of the Black Muslim movement. African blood, African origin, African culture, African ties. And you'd be surprised. We discovered that deep within the subconscious of the black man in this country, he's still more African than he is American. He thinks that he's more American than African because the man is jiving him and the man is brainwashing him every day, telling him, you're an American, you're an American. Man, how could you think you're an American and you have never had any kind of American treat over here? You have never, never. 10 men can be sitting at a table eating, you know, dining. And I can come and sit down where they're dining. They're dining. I got a plate in front of me, but nothing is on it. Because all of us are sitting at the same table, are all of us diners? I'm not a diner until you let me dine. Then I become a diner. Just being at the table with others who are dining doesn't make me a diner. And this is what you got to get in your head here in this country. Just because you're in this country doesn't make you an American. And no, you got to go farther than that before you can become an American. You've got to enjoy the fruits of Americanism. And you haven't enjoyed those fruits. You've enjoyed the thorns. You've enjoyed the thistles, but you have not enjoyed the fruits. No, sir. So I point these things out, brothers and sisters, so that you and I will know the importance in 1965 of being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us into fighting one another. I say that again that I'm not a racist. I don't believe in any form of segregation or anything like that. I'm for the brotherhood of everybody, but I don't believe in forcing brotherhood upon people who don't want it. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves, and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we practice it with them also, if we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank. And I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers.
on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep, Alapia, and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Good afternoon to all of you, and we welcome you to another edition of the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, Dr. William Rogers. We have a very exciting program for you this afternoon, this evening. Our program is dedicated in honor of our great brother and ancestor, the great Malcolm X, also known as Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. So today we're going to talk about Pan-Africanism, and we have two wonderful guests, special guests. We have one guest that is new to the Black Reality Think Tank, Mr. Wayne Young. He is the publisher of a Pan-African magazine called The Port of Harlem. And we have another young brother who is no stranger to the Black Reality Think Tank, Mr. Alfonso Watkins. He is the founder and CEO of a Pan-African group of activists called the Milwaukee African-American Council of Elders. And the two of these brothers are going to sit down with me this evening, and we're going to talk about, along with you, our audience, the Pan-African idea and what we need to do, and take a look at the past movements and what they attempted to do and what is it that we need to continue to do. I wanted to open our program with a quote from one of our ancestors, the great Dr. Jacob Carruthers. It says, "We must restore the historical consciousness of the African people. The new reawakening Africans would then create a new African reality and be a major factor in rescuing the world from the pessimistic prospects facing the world as a result of the flaws in the scientific worldview, which now prevails and dominates the consciousness of the intellectual community." Dr. Jake Carruthers. And so tonight we are going to proceed with a wonderful conversation. I'm looking forward to talking to these brothers and look at some of the work that they are doing. A lot of our brothers and sisters are doing Pan-African work, and we want to hear about that and encourage others and see how they can join in and help with some of the things that are going on. And just to kind of realize that and ask ourselves the question, is this the approach that we need to be taking? So with that, I am going to do what we always do every week. We do an ancestral profile. The ancestral profile gives us an opportunity to talk about those shoulders that we stand on, those great shoulders. And so tonight my profile is of a brother by the name of Henry Sylvester Williams. Henry Sylvester Williams. Brother Williams was a Trinidadian lawyer and writer who has become known as the father of Pan-Africanism. Brother Williams coined that phrase, Pan-African, and he organized the first Pan-African conference held at Westminster Hall in London in 1903. He became an attorney, a barrister, and he began to practice in South Africa, becoming the first black man to be called to the bar in the Cape Colony. Williams was born on February 19th, 1869, in Port of Spain, Trinidad. He is the eldest of five children. He attended the normal school in the Port of Spain, and he qualified as a primary school teacher at the age of 17, and he was put in charge of a school a year later. For the next 5 years, he served as head teacher. In 1891, he went to New York City, where he worked at odd jobs for 2 years. After 2 years in the USA, he moved in 1893 to Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, to study for a law degree. But he did not complete his degree. But while living in Canada, Williams became a co-founder of the pioneering and innovative Colored Hockey League, which lasted from 1894 to 1936. He was featuring teams from Nova Scotia and New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island. In 1896, Williams immigrated to England, settling in London. and a year later he enrolled at King's College to resume his study of law. He and three other Trinidadian lawyers read for the bar at Gray's Inn. Brother Williams supported himself as a lecturer, lecturing extensively on Trinidad and consistently denounced Crown colony rule as a heartless system, a synonym for racial contempt. He led a deputation of Trinidadians to meet MPS and become the first person of African descent to speak in the House of Commons. Williams wrote to newspapers and journals on matters touching on Pan-African interests, and he also earned money through lecturing for the Church of England Temperance Society. This took him to all parts of the British Isles, speaking under the auspices of parish churches. The then 29-year-old Williams became friendly with 32-year-old Agnes Powell, who worked as a secretary with the Temperance Society and by whom he had several children. In 1897, Williams formed the African Association to publicize injustices against African peoples everywhere and to promote their interests. To foster a sense of unity among all African people, he convened what he called the first Pan-African Conference in London on July 23rd through the 25th, 1900, and himself was the general secretary. There were 37 delegates and 10 other participants and observers. The chair was taken by Bishop Alexander Walters, a leader of the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church in the United States and president of the National Afro-American Council. The vice chairman was representative of the independent African states, Frederick Johnson, who was the former Secretary of General of Liberia, and the Haitian Benito Sylvain, who was aide-de-camp to the Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie. The conference discussed many issues. Among them was the importance of preserving the identity of the black race and the need for the colonial powers to recognize the rights of indigenous people. The conference was reported in the leading London newspapers of the time, which was the Westminster Gazette, and it observed that it marks the initiation of a remarkable movement on history. The African is at last awake to the potentialities of his future. The conference formed the Pan-African Association with Williams as honorary secretary, and it was the conference which gave currency to the term Pan-Africanism. After the conference, Williams went to Jamaica, Trinidad, and the United States to set up branches of the Pan-African Association. He returned to London, and he launched a monthly journal called The Pan-African in 1901. It later collapsed after a few years. The Pan-African was designed to spread information concerning the African and his descendants in the British Empire and to be the mouthpiece of the millions of Africans and their descendants. Unfortunately, Williams did not succeed in organizing a second Pan-African Congress, partly because of the shortage of funds. In 1903, Williams visited South Africa. He practiced law in Cape Town and played the role of agitator in his quest to promote African interests among minority European dominations. He was probably the first black man to practice as a barrister defending African people in the courts. Williams was regarded as dangerous by the ruling South African Europeans and was probably forced to leave. Back in London in 1905, he became involved in leftist British politics. And in 1906, he won a seat on the St. Marybourne Borough Council, becoming probably the first black elected official in Britain's history. He was denounced by the British Council in 1908 after going to Liberia and decided to move back to Trinidad. In Trinidad, he practiced law. He lectured on Africa and was actually connected with the Working Men's Association, which was one of Trinidad's earliest political organizations. Williams fell ill toward the end of 1910, and in March of 1911, he died in a hospital. He has many wonderful legacies. the University of the West Indies, St. Augustine, Trinidad, and Tobago had a conference on Henry Sylvester Williams and Pan-Africanism, a retrospection and projection. This was held back in 2001. Sylvester Williams, the father of Pan-Africanism. We really embrace this brother. He is truly a pioneer. There were several other organizations that launched off from Henry Sylvester Williams' work. One of them was the second Pan-African Conference that was held in 1919, where the great W.B. Du Bois was involved. And from then on, there were great leaders. It seems, it appears that there is a certain way that we have to look at Pan-Africanism and its ideas and its principles. And obviously, there are a lot of individuals, even prior to that, to Sylvester Williams, that were promoting Pan-Africanist ideas, but they obviously had not coined that in that way, but they were still practicing them, and we always want to make sure we recognize them as well, too. And then, obviously, there are those who were working under the banner of the concept Pan-Africanism. And very clearly, our hero that we gave honor to today, Brother Malcolm X, was clearly a Pan-Africanist. The Honorable Marcus Garvey, clearly a Pan-Africanist. And we're going to talk about all of that. And then we want to also discuss, what does it actually mean? What does the word Pan-African mean? What does it mean in practice? What does it mean from the organizational standpoint? And as I said, our guest today is a Pan-Africanist. He is the publisher of a publication that operates, and it is entitled The Port of Harlem. And he will explain his title to you. And our second guest is a no stranger to the Milwaukee community. He is the CEO of an organization here in Milwaukee called the African American Council of Elders, which is also a Pan-Africanist program, and it consists of many in our community who are Pan-Africanists in practice. And so we're very glad to have them aboard. Let me first welcome Mr. Wayne Young, who is the publisher of The Port of Harlem. Good afternoon, Mr. Young, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you doing? I think I'm off, though.
All right. No, you're on. I had your mic off for a minute.
Okay.
But no, you're back on. You're back on.
And well, that's good to know, Dr. Rodgers, that I'm here.
Good. You're there. And I'm glad. I'm so happy that you're there. Our second guest is, as I said, no stranger, Brother Alfonso Watkins. Brother Alfonso, are you there?
Yes, Baba. Peace and blessings to the family.
Peace and blessings to you. Thank both of you gentlemen for being here and for being prepared to conversate with us today about a very critical topic. As I say, we chose a dynamic individual to work from, obviously very clearly a powerful Pan-Africanist, the great Malcolm X. And so we will definitely get into our discussion, and we hopefully can come up with some ideas to provide our audience who might be in their agenda-setting stage of things. In our promotion, we had asked the question, why didn't we follow the Pan-Africanist agenda that all of these great men and women, and there were many women that were involved in the Pan-African movement as well. We had a program on the Black Reality Think Tank maybe about a year ago, where we brought in one of the very strong activist Pan-African organization to interview them. They were called Africans on the Move. And this organization was founded by one of our dear ancestors and his wife, who is still with us, Dr. Ahmed and Dorothea Ambalia. They have an organization called African on the Move. And she has, and I'm telling you, they have consistently, over the many years that I've known them, and I've known them well over 30 years, have worked on Pan-African programs and ideas. And that one of the issues that particularly Dr. Dorothea Ambalia talked about, and she and I were colleagues at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, were the women that were involved in the Pan-African movement. And so we definitely don't want to leave that out. But so the question, both to you, Brother Alfonso, and Brother Young, and I'll start off first by asking Brother Young, and then I want him to get into a little bit description about his magazine. is, from your perspective, why didn't we keep that agenda that the Sylvester Williams, the Martin Delaney's, Marcus Garvey's, the W.B. Du Bois's had set for us, the framework that they had developed in creating a Pan-Africanist ideal type of organization? What do you think? What do you think, from your perspective, happened that we didn't?
Well, from my perspective, it is happening.
Okay.
That I don't think that, you know, it's nice to look back and think that back in that day that they had 100% support from the black community at home or abroad.
No, they didn't have that.
And they probably didn't have that much support. They didn't have as much support as we would like to think they had. I think even now there are still lots of people who are still following their agenda or even implementing implementing new agendas and branching off from what they left off. But so my big question would be is, why aren't more people following, or why not more people adhering to it, as opposed to why people aren't? I think there are people who are actually doing it, lots
okay.
of people.
Right. Yeah, and you're
it's
right.
It's just not
right.
as it's not as good as we would like it to be, mm-hmm. or it's not as many as we would like it to be. But there are people.
Right.
And I'm always meeting them, working with them, and they always energize me. And we get to the conversation, I would love to mention a couple of people.
Please do.
And how their work is there. And all we have to do is look at them and go to them and follow them and be a part of the project.
Right, right. That's great. Thank you. Brother Watkins,
this show is one of them.
Thank you. Brother Watkins,
yes.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with my brother. I think we are continuing to see ourselves through the Creator and our ancestors with building on the Pan-African ideology of self-determination and black nationalism. So we continue it, but I think a lot of times we haven't quite had much conversation about the assault, the warfare that is being implemented to keep us divided, to keep us from moving forward with unifying as a collective group of people. So we have to be more strategic in our conversations and be more intentional with identifying the tactics that that are being used to keep us from unifying and keeping us from establishing this African personality on the continent as well as in the diaspora.
Right.
I agree with that. We have to resist when people tell us what we are not.
Right. Exactly.
For instance, lots of times I tell someone, I could be in a room full of people, and it could be black or mixed, and I could tell them that I'm an African, and they ask me, why do you say that? I don't think I have to justify that, and I don't.
Okay. Gotcha. Very good. I want to talk a little bit about the definition of Pan-African and what that really means. But as I do, I want to just quickly play a clip. This is coming from a young African brother. His name is Thomas Wakiaga. Thomas Wakiaga. He is actually, believe it or not, 18 years old. Listen to this young brother, Divine, and I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm just going to play a part of it. As he talks about Pan-Africanism and what it is and what it isn't.
Good morning. I'm here to talk to you about something that is near and dear to my heart. And what is this something I speak of? Pan-Africanism, of course. What is Pan-Africanism, you may ask? I would like to define it for what I think it really is. That being an ideology that asserts and supports the solidarity of Africans worldwide. It stresses on the fact that our unity as Africans, not just within the continent, but as well as the diaspora, is a vital part of our economic, social, and political progress in terms of the continent's survival. You see, I don't know about you, but I grew up believing that anywhere but Africa was heaven. I thought that being African was one of the worst things that could happen to you in life. And who could blame me? Look at the prevalence of tribalism, imperialism, and corruption within our continent. Now, let me give you a few scenarios that happened within our own country and other countries around the continent. Who would want to grow up living in a country where your leaders are wanted by the ICC? Who would entrust their livelihood to those who use public funds as their personal bank account? And would you want to live in a country that is still ruled by the primitive divide and conquer ideas left to us by the colonialists. I think that is going backward, and Africa is rising and meant to be moving forward. Before discovering what Pan-Africanism was, I would have told you that anyone who wanted to live in these conditions is crazy. However, now, as a Pan-Africanist, I tell you that I relish the opportunity and the chance to live in any one of these hellholes within the continent. You see, I understand and accept the challenge of uniting Africans and making it the next big thing, not only as a Pan-Africanist, but as a youth as well. If we had a standard of leadership where we were able to hold our leaders accountable for their scandals, iniquities, and irresponsibilities, we would then move forward. From this, I have a question to ask you. Imagine what Africa would be if Africans loved Africa as much as the rest of the world loved its resources. We would not rely on the aid of foreign.
Okay. This brother again, his name is Thomas Wakiaga. So why don't we respond to that? Brother Alfonso, you want to respond to his words?
Man, I'm still digesting what that young warrior is talking about.
18 years old, man.
Man, that's a wise young warrior, man. Wise young warrior. What was profound was the last thing he said for me was, imagine if we loved Africa as much as the invaders and colonizers loved the resources of Africa. That was profound for me. And I think that's critical. The science that they have used to create the psychological, let me say the psychological warfare that they have used to divide us from our original beings of wanting to be African is a science that we really have to understand and come up with theoretical modalities to help us shape that and deal with that. And also recognizing that the European invaders and colonizers have mastered the manipulation of our physical desires, of tapping into the human factor of what man is and his ego and how to manipulate that within the context of our leadership. So when he was speaking to that as well, that resonated with me in the concept of divide and conquer from the spiritual realm and the physical realm of within the context of those who are in African leadership. So that's what stands out to me with what the young brother was speaking to.
What about you, Brother Young?
Well, what stands out to me is two things. Number one, I kept getting this feeling that he was looking for perfection in Africa. And number two is that he wasn't looking at what he's doing right here at home, or home being, in this case, the United States. What I mean by looking for perfection is that, you know, he mentioned something about what if your president wasn't chased by the ICC. I mean, that's, at this point, especially with Donald Trump in the office, I remind all my African friends and my white friends, I never want to hear anyone else make any more comments about an African leader, a Caribbean leader, or even Marion Barry, who is now dead in D.C. Because Donald Trump has destroyed that myth that white people are superior. So we should have a discussion about African leaders being not perfect, because we all live right now with someone that's terribly imperfect. So putting us on that level and expecting it out of us is just not right. And number two is that it's just not looking for Africa to be perfect, but looking right here at home. Baltimore, we are the majority of people in Baltimore, majority of people in places like my hometown in Gary. That should be our focus. We don't have to look to Africa to being perfected or loving Africa. We can love where we live right now. We don't have to move to the suburbs and live with other people. Now that they move back into the city, we don't want to have to move back into the city to live with them. The point is where we are, just love yourself, period. And I've been having this conversation, hopefully, with one of these guys online about how I keep noticing that a lot of black Americans in particular gravitate toward the movie, the movie that came out about the mythical black place, Rwanda.
Okay.
And I was really touched by it. And then I questioned it because I went to go see it with a continental African, and he liked it, but he wasn't impressed. And when I asked him why wasn't he so impressed, he said because they spent $90 million making the film, and none of it in Africa.
Hmm.
So we showed it in Gambia at one of our, we'll talk about that later, but we showed it in Gambia, and the people got up, and they weren't like in all in awe. And I was thinking, why were they not in awe? And they said, because it's not real. It wasn't real. And, you know, we've been having this conversation off and on about why weren't they as enthused as American blacks, or my perception, they weren't as enthused. And I was thinking that the difference is that here people were looking for something to make themselves feel good, where they were looking for something more practical. And it goes back to him looking for something impractical in Africa, and that is perfection.
Okay. All right. Why don't you, while you're on it, Brother Young, tell us a little bit about your magazine and what you're trying to do in the Pan-African spirit of things, and how, you know, just give us a little background about that for us.
Well, the magazine started 25 years ago, so we're in our 20th year. We started in print, and then in 2008 we went online, and with Pan-African orientation, meaning that, and so we named it the Harlem, because Harlem is the world's most famous Pan-African community. So everything we do is Pan-African in orientation. All of our stories look at things from a world black perspective, and in doing so, we try to get black people in different parts of the world to at least see themselves as being equally human. And to me, that in itself is a task, because sometimes you get black people say very negative things about Africans, and Africans having a misunderstanding about people who live in other parts of the African world and not even knowing that they exist. And so we tend to present those different stories. Just an example, if I could be short, we just did some children, review of children books. And some of the books were set in Africa, some were set in the United States. And what we tried to do is show that there were similarities just between the people because they were human beings. And that even when they have a coffee ceremony in Ethiopia, it's called Buna, I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly, they have the same thing in Gambia, but it's called Taya. Okay. But it was written by people that were different. I forgot exactly, but the point is that they are all still humans.
Right.
And what we do beyond the magazine, the last part is that we do have a charity that spends time and works with the Gambians. And there we try to let our readers not just talk about being Pan-Africanist or wanting to be worldly, but to give them a chance to actually express themselves.
So basically your magazine is giving people in the diaspora an opportunity to understand sort of clearly what's going on the continent, and to give them a chance to see where they could fit in or engage at some level. Am I correct in saying that?
In all kinds of levels, whatever level they wish to, politically,
okay,
socially, literally. So I gave you an example of a book, you know. There's an event that happens, and that's why I say there's lots of Pan-Africans doing lots of Pan-African things. And one of the things we're involved in is a program called Read Africa. And that's where the kids come largely to the Smithsonian in D.C. We also have a smaller one in the community. And we only control the smaller one in the community, but there's another group that does the one downtown. And every year they bring illustrators and writers. Some are white, some are black, some are whatever they are. But they write books. They've been vetted to be have been displaying Africa accurately. And the kids get free books. And the whole point is to expose the kids to Africa as it really is, not as a fantasy,
okay,
but as a reality. And to have them have a good feeling about just being who they are.
Okay. I like that. All right. And are these books then widely distributed, basically?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All these authors have written several books, and many of them have major publishers. When you go online, you can see all the winners. And you can see the books, and you can see where to buy them. And you can buy them online if you want to, or go to your local store. hopefully your locally black-owned store, but, you know, you can get the stores. They're widely available.
Right. I would hope they would use the Black Bookstore to do that. You're right. And your publication is www.portofharlem.net.
Perfectly. Right. Perfect.
Good enough. Okay. I was very impressed with it even before I met you. I remember reading it several times, and I said, I got to reach out to this brother. And so that's one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the program today. So thank you. And let me ask
you before I go to
Brother Alfonso with the same question. Let me ask you, in terms of definition, was that young man's definition on track for you, or would you have a different viewpoint of what Pan-Africanism is? Let me just ask Brother Young, then I'm going to come to you, Brother Father. What did you think, Brother Young, in terms of his definition? How did you see that?
I think it was fine.
Okay.
I think it was fine. You know, everybody can define themselves as they choose.
Okay.
And that's what we encourage people to do. But for me, it's just simply being able to identify myself and my condition and related to other African people. And that's my reality.
Okay.
And so, for an example, would be it goes beyond just the color of my skin, but it goes by the fact that I know that in this country I'm at the bottom of the barrel.
Okay.
Maybe only Native Americans are at the very, very bottom. And in the world, all African people tend to be at the bottom of the barrel, and they tend to treat us all the same. So we have the same issues. We just did a story, for instance, on the virus. And the virus, according to science at this point, has an effect on black people because of certain living conditions. Well, those same conditions often exist in Africa. And it's not because we're black, because we don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
We're most likely going to live in crowded conditions, those type of things. So, you know, you're talking about, this division of people. It's more like a reality. And I'm going to end right here on this point. The one time that it really hit home to me that I was an African was the first time I went to Liberia. Well, the only time I went to Liberia, but the first time I went to Africa for my day job, which was then my day job. I went with a white coworker. We went out to was in Liberia, and there was an African Caribbean there and an African. We're just having a general conversation. It got political. At the end of the day, the African told me, Wayne, you can stay here, but you can take the white one back home.
Okay. All right.
Because we all agreed. Mm-hmm. Three black men for three different parts of the world never met each other, and we agreed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. We are talking with Brother Wayne Young, who is the publisher of the magazine called The Port of Harlem. It's a Pan-African magazine, and we're also talking to our good friend, Brother Alfonso Watkins, who is also operating a Pan-Africanist activist group in Milwaukee. And we're just kind of generalizing a little bit about the experience, where it is, what it needs to be, and so forth. For those of our Internet audience who would like to call with a question or a statement, you can do so at area code 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So with that, Brother Alfonso, what do you think? First of all, in terms of your definition, then tell us a little bit about what you're doing with the African-American, Milwaukee African-American Council of Elders, and then also talk to us a little bit about that definition as it relates to your work.
Yes. Honestly, I think the young brother was on point with connecting himself to the continent and to the challenges that we face under capitalism, being African, and being able to articulate what that means to him. So once again, I felt him in the context of him articulating what it meant to be African or Africanism and connecting themselves to the Pan-African movement.
Mm-hmm.
And identifying with that. So I think his definition of that was, I'm going to say profound to be for an 18-year-old to articulate that. And part of what I'm doing, well, what we're doing here with the African Elders Council is attempting to organize ourselves unified and with one voice to address the conditions of the city of Milwaukee. When I first started off doing the research for this, I went and spoke with some of the elders in the community that I have been watching for over 25 years to get their insight about what they saw from a historical context, had they attempted to do a council of elders. And I would, so many of us shared them, this is not nothing new. Once again, we continue in the struggle of our ancestors through organizing and attempt to organize us to address the conditions that we face under racism and capitalism. So so the research that I did, once again, I looked for something on an international level, and I found the Friends of the African Union. And they had, it was a website that gave, that laid out the framework for Council of Elders. So I did the research, put it up, and then once again started speaking to some elders. So we've been meeting for about the last 7 months, once a week, to establish to create this Council of Elders. And once again, from a Pan-Africanist perspective, once again, is being able to get some elders to take ownership of the narratives of what we are facing with in the conditions of Milwaukee, from a political, economic, housing, the disparities, just all of the disparities that we're facing here. So I felt from the I'm a licensed clinical psychotherapist. So from that perspective, I just felt we needed leadership to start, to shape this conversation coming out of an African paradigm or African perspective. So once again, that's the framework of this Council of Elders. And then once again, creating think tanks with the it's actually the 9 areas of human activity from the book of Neely Fuller's. Okay. So we're looking at from spiritual, psychological and physical health, labor law, politics, sex, warfare, I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but creating think tanks around these areas to help inform our community about how these areas of activity and how racism impacts these areas and keep us in this dysfunctional state of being. So hopefully, once again, within the context of this Council of Elders, is creating these think tanks, getting elders who are, to a certain extent, experts who have life experiences, who have practiced in these areas to help inform the constituency of here in Milwaukee, those who are willing to come out and get the information, to once again help them acquire the necessary coping mechanisms, survival skills, to change their lifestyle, to change the conditions of the city. Okay. So that's from a Pan-Africanist perspective, once again, attempted to bring the concept of what it means to be Black nationalists, to practice supporting one another from a Black nationalist or Pan-Africanist perspective. And in the group, we have brothers and sisters from all walks of life. We got some brothers and sisters who are from the Muslim community, the Christian community, from Kemet, from the Kemet Institute, brothers who are practicing African culture, traditional African religion. So there's a variety of brothers and sisters in the room. But once again, we're attempting to come up under the umbrella of the principles of Maat, the Ngunga Saba, and the concept of Mbantu, to once again formulate that African personality. So in a nutshell, that's what we are attempting to do here in Milwaukee.
Okay, I like that. Now let me ask this. And, you know, we started off the conversation, we prefaced our remarks in talking about, you know, looking at what, who's doing what, the fact that there are a lot of people involved that, you know, may be very well working on Pan-African agendas, nationalist agendas. So let me ask this then. So what would, from your perspective, what would an ideal Pan-African nationalist agenda look like? What would it? What would be the goal and objective of a well-structured agenda of a Pan-African nationalist organization? Just like when they pulled those councils together, they had some specific things that they wanted to see happen and done, and so they spelled that out. So from your perspective, what would be the ideal situation that you would like to see happen?
Would you like me for?
You, because just you were talking. I'll go to Brother.
From the historical perspective, we Africans have always wanted to be self-determined, self-determined, being able to control the our human capital, but as well as the resources on the continent of Africa. For those of us in the diaspora, once again, being able to be self-determined, control the resources in our community, control the education of our children, being able to determine what our destiny is going to be as it relates to within the social, political, and educational realm. So I think the agenda is the same agenda that they was asked. I mean, that they put on the table in 1900s, okay. Early 1900s, is for us to be able to live without the assault of the of capitalism in the European concept of racism.
Okay.
So once again, I think the agenda is the same agenda, but it has moving into the 21st century. Once again, I think the Europeans they have stepped up their attack as it relates to how they are attacking us, and I think what they were doing in the 1900s and in the 60s, what they're doing now is on a whole nother level as it relates to the warfare. Because now there is germ warfare now. They're actually, the assault is actually at our genetics. And so a lot of times when we start having a conversation as it relates to how do we prepare ourselves, it's helping our people understand that just the water and the food that they are digesting is impacting our ability to organize and unify, because they're causing division or they're causing problems in our genetic makeup.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, within the context of setting the agenda, is understanding how we are being attacked as well.
So then what a good idea would look like is a well-informed community and a group about, you know, your environment and navigating through that environment. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a nutshell. Yeah, the information... the information, how the information is disseminated, is critical.
Okay.
But then the type of information that's being disseminated, because it's not just us being able to organize and disseminate information, but it's also us being able to provide, defend, and protect ourselves from the assault of anybody.
Okay.
And that's where Malcolm, being able to speak on his day, on his Earth Day, once again, he recognized that all of this, we can have a beautiful idea. The ideology is going to be beautiful, but we can't defend it. If we are not able to defend ourselves, it's to a certain extent we are left defenseless.
Right. Very good. That's exactly what I'm getting. Brother Young, how do you see that? What would be a ideal agenda program for a Pan-African nationalist framework? What would be an ideal situation that you would see? Oh, I'm sorry, Brother Young. I apologize. Okay, go ahead, Brother Young.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree, but I would just my perspective is different in that it's not so much on an agenda, but on how we think and how we behave. And first of all, I try to stay away from the agenda because everybody has all these different agendas and they have different interests. And I think they can continue with their different agendas and their different interests. And in this short conversation, I already spoke of different people who, in my opinion, fulfill a Pan-Africanist agenda, but they're all in different things. They have different interests, and they fulfill those things very well. My only problem would be from the past is that those agendas never went anywhere because everybody scattered or did something. So my thought is just simply is that whatever people do and however they do it is that they first just look at themselves as being part of the larger African community and just do it within the community. So to make that in practical terms, that means that if I'm into traveling and I'm saving my money to travel, go home. Go to a black nation. Why go to London? If you're going to travel the United States, why go to Disney World? Go someplace where you're going to able to put money into some black hands. And those black hands will be able to buy those communication modes that you're speaking of so you can control your message.
Right.
Get a black newspaper or get on a black-owned website. Get on anything or spend money wherever you can that's going to benefit the general community. And no one should have to write that agenda out to you. And so one of the things that makes us different, though, is that we never associate our oppression with capitalism. Because capitalism was just a tool that they used. And I think it becomes clear that it's just a tool. Because now we see how China, which claims to be communist, which I would say they're not 100% communist because half the time they're kind of capitalist, that you see how much problems they're causing in Africa in particular.
Good.
There was the one session they had downtown that I thought was, I refer to downtown D.C., that I think the lady was very clear. And this is what I mean by Pan-Africanism. It's a think tank. And there's lots of think tanks here. But this one is funded by a black man. It is run by black people. And the lady said, and the whole conference was on the Chinese being in Zambia, what they called it, Chambia. And one of the things that the Zambian was saying that, you know, whether it was English or China, if someone was coming in, and it's good for their kids to learn Mandarin because that's the next language. And for the kids not to learn Mandarin, it'll be to lock themselves out. And some people was like, well, that's like trading one master for another. And then the lady goes, well, you know, everybody in Africa is not black. And she had to repeat that again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's
and, you know, it was kind of shaking up people, mm-hmm. but her point was is that, you know, again, it goes back to this idealism of what Africa is and what an agenda is and these type of things. And I don't think we need to have those types of things that are almost untouchable or not achievable. But it's a thought process of just simply being, in my opinion, like the Chinese, is that when they're building something in China, they bring everybody over. And that's one that the Africans complain about. They even bring people over to sweep the floors when you can hire an African to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They come and they even open stores up for their own people.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah,
and they shop in their own stores. The very last time I was in Gambia, it was like 6 months ago, and I was like shocked because I saw this new grocery store, and it's written, you know, Chinese letters on top, going inside, they're selling Chinese food, and Chinese people running it. I come back home, I see the same thing, but it's in the black neighborhood.
Okay.
Yes, so my whole thing is I don't need the agenda. I just need the mindset to say, hey, I don't need to do that. I can do my own thing.
See, yeah, can I would just like the response to the capitalism piece. Nkrumah, in all of his works, he talks about capitalism and imperialism and understanding the concept of what capitalism does to the human spirit. So, from a developmental psychology perspective, capitalism breeds a dysfunctional personality into all of us. It because it dehumanizes human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so those of us who once again, capitalism was built on the backs and in the sweat and blood of Africans.
Well, I would say working people, regardless
of
who they are.
I mean, that word working people, but I'm just saying in the context of, from a developmental perspective, we have to identify what racism uses to keep us in this state of being, of not being truly African. And capitalism and imperialism is one of the tools that are used. So I'm just saying, from a developmental perspective, we have to recognize what type of personality traits come with participating in capitalism. So when we talk about Pan-Africanism, one of the tenets of Pan-Africanism is socialism. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us really don't understand the concept or the framework of what socialism is, and what type of personality that creates in individuals or human beings that functions under socialism versus capitalism. So we have the conversation about Pan-Africanism, we have to talk about capitalism and socialism as well, to help us get the differentiation between what type of human beings are being produced and what type of human beings we need to produce to have a Pan-Africanism perspective or Pan-Africanist lens. So I just wanted to put that on the table.
Okay. Well, we're gonna take a break. It's the top of the hour, and I'm going to come back, and I want to open up to some of our audience. We have a lot of folk that are online waiting to probably give their remarks or response. We want to open up our lines to them. We're going to take a quick break. We think we're talking with Brother Wayne Young, who is the publisher of a Pan-African journal called Port of Harlem. And we are talking with Brother Alfonso Watkins, who is operating a Pan-African activist group called the Milwaukee African American Elders Council. And so they are both giving us their perspective. Let's take just a very quick break. We're not going to be out long, and I'm going to come back and open up the lines to our brothers and sisters to see what their position is on the Pan-African idea.
The Organization of Afro-American Unity sees the only hope for the black man in America in a strong Africa, and the necessity of the Afro-American becoming inseparably linked with the overall program that's existing on the African continent. The two problems must be solved together, and the two forces must go forward together. And so the Organization of Afro-American Unity has a program to link the Afro-Americans with the Africans and the Africans with the Afro-Americans. When I say Afro-Americans, I mean those throughout the entire Western Hemisphere. This is our only hope. Our hope is in a strong Africa. And when Africa is strong, our position in America will be one of respect. But if Africa is weak, we will never be in a position of respect in America. They used to have a saying that one doesn't have a Chinaman's chance. But they don't say that anymore. They used that expression back when China was weak. But now since Mao Zedong has been successful in making China a strong country, the Chinese have more chance than anybody else. So this saying has become outdated. Well, just as it took a strong China to give a Chinese person respect wherever that Chinese person is found on this earth, when we get a strong Africa, the person of African origin or African ancestry will be respected any place on this earth, even in America. But he will not be respected in America until Africa is strong, just as the Chinaman wasn't respected abroad until China became strong.
He was the leader who knew the...
Hello. My name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank, and I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, we're back with you, my brothers and sisters. You are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 7 Central to 9 Central. Every Tuesday evening from 7 Central to 9 Central. We also have a weekend edition that airs on Saturday from 3 p.m. Central to 5 p.m. Central. And that program is hosted by Miss LaWanda Chambers and Miss Leola Williams. And you have a good opportunity to talk about some family things and talk about things that impact us in terms of our health and our mental health and those kinds of issues. So we're very excited about that program. They're now in about their fourth week. And so we look forward to some exciting things for them every Saturday, again, from 3 to 5 p.m. Central. And then this is the timeforanawakening.com network, which is a part of the blacktalkradionetwork.com, which is we rest upon. And then also there are many others that are involved here. Our sponsor of the Black Reality Think Tank Tuesday edition is Motherland Media, which is operated by Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. He has a program called African Perspectives that airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1 Eastern, broadcasting out of Atlanta, Georgia. Again, he's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Very dynamic program. And then on Friday evening, we have Time for an Awakening that airs from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. They are airing and broadcasting out of Philadelphia. Dynamic interviews and guests that they have. And then on Sunday, they are back on from 7 to 10, 7 to 10 Eastern Time on the Time for an Awakening Network and the Black Talk Radio Network as well. And so we have, and there are other programs that are on this platform as well. You can go to www.timeforanawakening.com. www.timeforanawakening.com. And you can take a look at some of the other programs that air. Also, that is our archive. You can go in and retrieve any of the programs that have previously aired by simply going into the search portal and either pull up Black Reality Think Tank, African Perspectives, Time for Awakening, and you will get an opportunity to see a list of the programs that have aired. And so by all means, do that. And this is a dynamic medium for us to reach our people, to spread the word, to give you a chance to talk about those things. And let's help build some of those agendas so we can really make the changes that are necessary in our communities. I know last week I didn't get a chance to talk to all of our guests. I'd apologize for some of you that I missed or overlooked. As one brother, I definitely owe him. Brother Timothy, are you there? I owe you. I missed you last week. I'm going to go to you first this week. Are you there, Brother Timothy? Brother Timothy?
Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me, Dr. Rogers?
I'm looking for Brother Timothy.
All right, I'll go back on hold.
Okay. Brother Timothy, he's not there. I guess he's there. Anyway, so you at least can say I didn't call on him. Okay, I go to my good buddy. I always call on Brother Herbie White, Durham, North Carolina. How you doing, Brother Herbie?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and Hotep to the guests on the show and everybody listening in.
Hotep.
Pan-Africanism, Brother White, what you think?
I think that Pan-Africanism is the state of mind of every African individual to understand what it means to be an African. And from that state of mind, you develop relationships and organizations and efforts to further African interests. So that even if you find yourself in a position where you're not a part of an African organization or an African movement, it's still your everyday activities your everyday persona, your everyday interaction with other people will come from an African perspective and an African state of mind. It's sort of like if you...
Now, he's taking the words out of my mouth.
If you had, say, two children and one child was kidnapped when they were 2 years old or something, and they didn't see their brother until they was 40, they wouldn't recognize each other. But if you were Pan-Africanist, you would recognize that other African as your brother. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily your biological brother, but your brother just the same.
Okay.
And
I like that.
If you operate from that perspective, you can just imagine if every African person could say, I'll never do anything in my life to hurt another African. What that would mean to our condition.
Mm-hmm. That's solid. That's solid logic. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I can agree with that one.
Yeah, solid logic. Okay.
Yeah.
And that was what I was trying. That was, I mean, he was saying it, what he said, I could have said myself.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Okay, Awakening the African Mind. We got our the author and of that book, Brother Bruce Bridges. He's here with us, Brother Bruce. Pan-Africanism. I know you wrote extensively about that in your book. What are your thoughts?
Yes, Hotep, brothers.
Hotep.
All right, and of course, happy Earth Day to Brother Malcolm. And before I make those comments, Brother William, I'd like to maybe just mention a couple of things about Brother Malcolm, if it's okay. Is that okay? Are you holding that to later on in the program? Or?
No, go right ahead. Right, we've got a lot of folk on, but go right ahead. We still got a little time.
Okay, I won't take too long. First of all, let me just mention Malcolm, because I always think about how we as Africans in this country, we tend to celebrate and commemorate the holidays that we have been given by European people, whether it's Christmas, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Thanksgiving Day, Valentine's Day, 4th of July, or whether or not it's New Year's Day or whatever. But all of these holidays, all of them, as one of the brothers said earlier, he mentioned capitalism, all of them are set up and designed to promote the capitalist system of which we are a part. So I think it's very important that we define ourselves and to have days that we commemorate that we have come up with on our own. So I think this is a good day in terms of Malcolm X and his contributions to the struggle of African people in this country. And in listening to what you just said, what you played by him, until we recognize the power and the significance of Africa, and until Africa arises, Africans in America will not have the strength that they would have without having Africa as the root and as the power or the source of their very beings. And a good example is China. As the brother said earlier, China is in China, but then in New York you got Chinatown, and he went into the Gambia and he saw Chinese people running Chinese stores on the African continent. So until we get strong at home, as Malcolm said, we won't be strong over here. And somebody also mentioned Mao Zedong. I wanted to chime in on Mao Zedong. One reason that China is as it is today is because of what Mao Zedong did many years ago, and that is he did really what people are doing today with the virus. He closed China off. He kept the virus of capitalism away from China. He kept imperialism away from China. He kept European people for a long time from coming into China. He closed the doors of the whole country so that China could get themselves together. And then when the doors were open, China was strong. The virus was gone. The virus was no longer around. He put China under quarantine. And so China became a strong country. And so that's the result of what you see today. You see, so I'll come back a little later on, and I had some other comments, but I'll come back since if you want to get to some of the other call. So I wanted to mention Malcolm, and also wanted to mention how we as people need to be in quarantine ourselves. We as African people need to just close up and get ourselves together, and then we can become a great and strong people, and we can use what Mao Zedong did in China as an example of that.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We'll definitely come back to you, Brother Bridges. Thank you so much for those remarks, because that is very critical into this discussion. Brother Timothy, I see you have several numbers jumping up here. Brother Timothy, are you there?
Pardon me?
Brother Timothy?
I'm right here. Hear me, sir.
I see your number two or three times on the switchboard. I don't know what happened, but anyway.
I don't know what's going on either, sir. I can't tell you. Can you hear me, sir?
I'm 267 also. That's what it is. I'm 267 also.
No, he's got his 0012.
I'm another brother from Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
So I'll just go
on. Can you hear me, sir?
Okay. Well, Brother Timothy, I wanted to give you a chance to say something.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you well.
I can hear you. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, good, sir. Thank you for recognizing Malcolm X's birthday.
Yes, sir.
But I'm going to say this, sir, that we have an advantage over here. We understand that people in America who are nationalists should have a good idea of what Pan-African is themselves. And I would say that most people who I know who start off as nationalists want to stretch to the continent. But they also have, like everybody else realizes, that the white supremacy that sits over here and segregation is the same thing that goes on in Africa. So when we deal with wanting to have a homeland, wanting to control the resources, wanting to control the economics and the politics, we have to have a consciousness, like Brother Bruce is saying, or the true host of you, the two guests that you had, that we have to come in this with a mindset. That's the whole idea, your divinity, where you come from, and your origin, okay, and where we have to go.
I'm with all the callers.
I mean, we got to first release the free the mind. And like Parliament Funkazella said, you free the mind and your behind will follow. So we have a hard struggle here because we can't get together here.
Yeah, sure.
You know, to get together over there. But we got to connect this.
Okay.
It's my contribution, that's all.
All right. Okay, let me go to your colleague from Philadelphia, Brother
333-267-2333. You talking to me, Dr. Rogers?
267-333, is that you? Or are you 267-902?
I'm 902.
Okay.
I'll go back on hold.
Would you like to make some remarks? Because the other call is not answering. Would you like to?
Yes, sir. I would love to.
Okay, please do.
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my brother Malcolm X's birthday. I believe Malcolm was a person or a man that I think is the perfect example of a man.
Okay.
So, you know, I had to go there first. I'm listening to the conversation. And I hear the thoughts on Pan-Africanism. And that's all I'm going to call it right now, the thoughts on Pan-Africanism. When my wife and I was on a cruise last year,
mm-hmm.
we hit a lot of the Caribbean islands.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Caribbean islands were, I guess, somewhere around 75% African. But we noticed one thing about a few of those islands. The Indians ran the bank. And the Chinaman ran the stores.
Mm-hmm.
And they were set up that way. And, you know, and to my, so I asked the people on the island, you know, me going there, how did this happen? And they said, that's just the way they set it up. I said, who was they? The banks. So, you know, we're dealing with something more powerful than what we think. You know, when I deal with a lot of the Africans off the continent here, they don't have the foggiest idea about Pan-Africanism. They're only here to indulge in capitalism, and we're part of that. So, you know, a part of what they believe, they can get capitalism. And I'm only going by my experience. You know, a lot of times I go out there, I look for different things. My wife and I, we were supposed to go to a trip to the continent this year for the first time because I wanted to experience what's going on over there. But, you know, with this virus happening, we had to cancel our trips. But I agree with that one brother. I think you called him Brother Bridges. What this virus has taught me and with the social distancing is something we should have been doing all the time. Integration should have never been part of our dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, like I heard before, our leaders that led us in this kind of mindset, their goal was to integrate toilets. We have to practice social distancing from these racist beasts first. And that includes the Chinamen. As soon as they lifted these nail salons and everything, our sisters were around the block to get their nails and hair done. Even though the Chinaman is like kicking the Africans behind over there in China and on his own continent. So I'm just calling about what I see, man. It's a thought. Right. It's not even a reality yet.
Can I ask the caller a question?
Yes, sir.
But you keep mentioning that you see non-blacks running things on the islands, but how about in the town that you're in? Do you see the same conditions or different conditions?
Same conditions, even though I have my own business. You know, I have my own. But no, it's the same conditions. Our women go to the nail salons and the hair salons to buy the hair. They run the little grocery markets, the fruit stands. So they're set up, man. You know what I mean? So I see the same thing here that I saw in the Caribbean islands. And from what I'm hearing you talk about, they're doing the same thing on the motherland. So, you know, it's disturbing to me. And I just had to add to the conversation. It appears that right now, Pan-African is a thought. I don't think too many of us buy into it. I'm trying my best to buy into it because I know that's our only salvation. But, you know, that's a pretty big but. I got to deal with reality, too. And I even got to deal with some of those folks that I see that lived on the continent that are over here now. That's far from their dialogue. So, you know. I just had to add my little 2 cents, Dr. Rogers. I'm listening,
okay. Very good.
Trying to gather some hope, but I just had to add my 2 cents. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much. I've got some other
folks. Can you respond to that?
Yes, go right ahead.
I think a lot of times, family, we have to do a better job of understanding psychological warfare and the impact that it has on the personality configuration of those of us who are constantly bombarded with the concept of racism, imperialism, colonialism, and how that impacts our ability to function properly. I would suggest that everybody, it's a must read, The Falsification of African Consciousness by Amos Wilson, lays a good foundation to help us begin to understand what is happening within the context of how our personality is being developed under this system of capitalism and racism. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when we have the conversation, people will have a frame of reference to articulate what we are experiencing as a collective group of people under a circumstance. So I would just like to put that on the table. So when people are listening to why we in the condition, we have to understand how our behavior was modified to get us in the condition that we are in. It's not just as easy as saying that we act this way because that's the way we act. No, psychological warfare is much deeper than that. And then you got to get into the concept of subliminal thought processes and how certain thought processes are engineered a particular way to benefit the racist or capitalist system. So Amos Wilson's book would be a good start to help brothers and sisters understand what we are seeing. Because once we can identify what we are seeing, we can come up with a theoretical modality to address what we're seeing.
Okay. So then the process from that perspective, and I clearly agree with you, the prospect from that would then would have to be education. Is that would be the way of sort of deprogramming from all of that? How would you do that? How is that? Is that who's working on that? How is that being considered?
There's a number of scholarly work out there that's working on it. I mean, Dr. Marumbani Yorugu, she's done a wonderful job at breaking down the different the social constructs of what European worldview versus an African worldview, or European conceptual belief system versus African belief system. So she's done a wonderful job. Dr. Frances Kress Welsing, the ISIS paper, she does from a scientific genetic perspective. She's done a wonderful job.
And I agree. But are we listening to them? We're not listening to them, are we?
No, we're not. I mean, we're not listening to them. I don't think people are reading the books. I mean, there's so much scholarly work out there that I think we have to begin to go back and read. We have to read, family. We just can't go on YouTube and pull up something on Google. We gonna have to do some study to change this behavior.
That's where I'm getting at. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, you're right.
And
got to do some groundwork,
And the brother didn't mention my book either, Bill. I don't know. Maybe he didn't know about it. But
he has a copy of it.
You know, I got your book, big brother. My bag. I got it on my. You know, it's on my desk. So I will be getting to it. So my bag.
It's got to leave your desk and go into your mind now.
That's what we're talking
about. How do we get people to pick that stuff up and start really getting into it? That's what I'm thinking. Right. I think we need a little help.
The brother said about, he talked about, and Bill, your question, how do we get to it? He mentioned YouTube and mentioned listening to things, but we must realize, and you're absolutely right, but some of our people, that's the way they're going to get it. They're going to listen to a CD or YouTube or listening to somebody talk about it, and they're not going to pick it up. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, I know it's not the way it should be. We should pick up a book and read it, but that's not exactly how it is. So I think any medium is my Malcolm said, by any means necessary, we need to get that information. If it's a radio podcast, if it's time for awakening.com, if it's a Black House, a think tank that they listen to every Tuesday night, we got to use all those means. I know we want them to read, but let's be real. All the brothers and sisters are not going to do that. With the television, we're competing with the television. Okay. I called a brother tonight in the background. He may be on now. I heard the television. Most people are not going to turn the television off to listen to something on the computer when they can see it and hear it at the same time. And all of this is a part of capitalism.
Very good.
It's all a part of propaganda. It's all a part of Europeans promoting their own way of promoting that way of thinking and passing it around to the world by putting it in all these pretty mediums, the pretty colors. You mentioned subliminal seduction. They use it that way. So we're fighting against all of that. But we must understand that some brothers are not going to read a book. They're going to look on YouTube. They're going to look at television. They're going to look at a CD or listen to a CD or a DVD. Look at a DVD and listen to a CD, whatever the case may be. So we got to realize that we have to hit them at all mediums, I think.
Exactly. Right.
Well, I think that the hitting people in all mediums, the whole point is that the world has changed. And most people don't read, and they don't even watch television. So if you really try to reach younger people, you're going to look
They're watching a little television now.
Even television, the big television stations are starting to die because people are able to have multiple channels. You don't get 579, you get 5-2, 5-3, 5-4. Plus, you can watch Netflix and all these other things.
And SiriusXM and all that. Right.
But let me just add to you that even in our magazine, we just did an article last week. There's a black guy that's in Africa right now who are teaching East Africans how to use all these fancy things that you're speaking of as being to create, quote, fake news. So the point is there are black people who are fulfilling a Pan-African agenda, and this is one guy who's from Los Angeles who's in Nairobi right now teaching East Africans how to use all these modern methods to get their message across.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not a capitalist thing. It's technology.
And they're embracing it.
And I'm going to tell you, go online right now. There's a number of them from Senegal, from Gambia. Just Google it. And there's a lot of people there who are doing lots of good things, and a lot of them, what I'm most proud of, is that the Gambians are often very, very young.
Okay.
And to me, they will put kids here to shame.
Okay.
Because they are so young, and yet they're producing all these videos and shows like this. Mm-hmm. There's a lady from Gambia. It's called the Fatu Show. She produces a show like this, and the lady has to be under 30.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good point.
And it's serious, talking, and a serious conversation.
I've got a
serious conversation.
I would love to hear.
So it's happening.
I'd love to hear from my sisters. I'd love to hear from my sisters. They're doing some things out. We have a couple of them online. We have a Pan-Africanist activist who works diligently in her community. We've got a young sister that has just started a Saturday school. Let me talk to her first. Ms. Chambers, how are you doing this afternoon? Hello, Ms. Chambers? Okay, I guess she's not there. Okay, let me go over here to Sister Ayan from Greensboro, very strong activist, Pan-African activist. Brother Sister Ayan, what are your thoughts?
Well, Habadi Ghani, Alafia, everyone, how's everybody doing?
Okay.
I'm thinking, my thoughts are that everything that everybody said pretty much was on point. And as an activist, the root word being active, I always want to put out on the table, what are we actually doing? Because we gained the knowledge, and by the way, our ancestor Malcolm said it, you know, by any means necessary, as Bruce reiterated. But what are we doing? We do have to free the mind, as was said, you know, earlier. We have the same, in terms of Pan-Africanism, let me just say this. In terms of Pan-Africanism, we have the same ancestors, whether we're in America, Africa, wherever. We have the same African worldview if we embrace our African culture. And we have the same enemy. And we have the same results of trauma from experiencing the hell from that enemy, the hellish experiences from the enemy. So what are we doing? It seems that the most important thing for us is to change as many minds, to heal as many minds as we can so we can go into action and be active, because these discussions are wonderful. They are critical. But I think I heard somebody mention programming. I've talked about in the past, and I'll keep reiterating this, we can do a lot. You know, one of the things we can start with, we could have deprogramming schools, classes, whether they're online, in your churches, wherever, and start to insert the African mind and take out the Europeanized model, because it is psychological warfare. Europeans put a whole lot of work into Europeanizing the Africans. And it was a major part of their strategy, so that has to be undone. Because, yes, we're sick all over this globe. Mm-hmm. We're hated all over this globe. And we have to undo that. And we can.
Right.
So I just want to, you know, keep driving home the point that there's a lot that we can do, and let's just do it, because we are in dangerous times. There's very clear genocide going on now. It's very obvious. Every time I turn around, they're killing a brother now,
mm-hmm,
or beating up on a black woman.
That's right.
So let's put all of these things into action, because one last thing, Marcus Garvey said that he would come back in a whirlwind with the rest of the ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe if we keep on reaching to our ancestors, following that model toward Pan-Africanism, that will happen. Garvey and the rest of the ancestors will come back. We'll get the help that we need, quarantine ourselves, and reclaim Africa.
Right. Okay. Let me go to Brother Pugh. Brother Pugh, you got any remarks along this line?
Well, one, I'd say that the young man, what was his name? Wakiaga. He was absolutely brilliant.
Yes, right.
There are a thousand things to say, but just to be succinct, I'd put it this way. that if you want a basis for unification, when you've got when you got people all over the world, well, you need a basis for that, and I'm going to suggest the basis, the fundamental distinction between people who can live in harmony with the planet versus people who can't. If you want to live in harmony with this planet, then you have to prefer biology to technology. You have to prefer ecology to economics. You have to prefer the many to the few, and you have to prefer the golden rule to the gangster rule. And you see it with this coronavirus, where the very folks who prefer biology, life, who prefer ecology, who prefer the many and so on, these are the people who are marginalized by the coronavirus. The other thing I suggest is that if a people are going to be free, ultimately what that means is that, one, they have the ability to defend themselves, and they have the ability to attack. That's one. That's called freedom from fear. The second is they have the ability to communicate internally, and they have the ability to communicate externally. That's freedom to speak. Thirdly, they have the ability to produce what they need and to consume what they produce. That's freedom from want. And then finally, they have the ability to transcend their current reality, and they have the ability to intervene and change their current reality. That's freedom to worship. Those are the four freedoms that humans have if they want to function on the planet. And then the final thing, with respect to Amos Wilson, well, you know, he said that there are five pathologies that humans have. There are really only four, and the four that his five, you know, reduced to is, first of all, it was anxiety, and the antidote to anxiety is courage, and the way you can get that courage is just through love. The second pathology he identified was amnesia, not knowing what your traditions are, and obviously the antidote to that is exposure. The third pathology he identified was apathy, lack of confidence that you have in your own people. That's one of the reasons that folks are having difficulty getting collaborative efforts going. And you just get that by practice. In other words, you just realize that, you know, I failed this time and try again, and I'll fail better. And eventually, over time, I will develop the capacity to sustain an organization with my people. And then the final pathology that Amos Wilson identified was called alienation. That is to say, it's black people that don't like what they see in the mirror. And the antidote to that is commitment. And in fact, I think I heard Oshie say one day, look in the mirror long enough until you like what you see in that mirror, right, and so on. But you can go on and on, but I would say that summarizes it.
Very good. Brother Marcus, is that you?
Yes, brother, that's me.
Okay, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, good brother.
Great.
You know, sometimes, you know, we really don't have to reinvent the wheel, because a lot of what we need to be done have been laid out. The black print is in front of us. The black print, everybody followed the black print and went to freedom. The Chinese followed the black print of Garvey, moved to freedom. The Indian followed the black print of Garvey, moved to freedom. Except us. We didn't pick up from where Garvey left off. We threw ships.
That's right.
Ships. And that's what we have to get, that operational, organizational Pan-Africanism. It's how we put it into effect. We know what we have to do is how we put it into effect. And we don't need everybody. We don't need everybody. In America, you have less than 1,000 people running the show. Less than 1,000 people run 350 million people. So you don't need everybody. But it is time now. It is evident now that we must, I repeat, we must get together and organize and do this. Get our wealth.
Country, it should.
The wealth of Africa. That is the wealth. That is our wealth. That is our legacy. And we need that wealth of Africa so we can move as a people. So we have to join with our brothers and sisters on the continent, joint ventures, and start to do business and get some money and start to get those ships so we can move our people and goods moving, because that's what it takes.
Right.
You see,
right.
I have reached a point, brother, I just tired of talking. I am tired. We talk. Now is the time to act.
Action.
And I want to say one thing about Malcolm. You see, a lot of Malcolm information, a lot of people don't know, you know. Malcolm was getting a lot of his information from the Orthodox Pan-Africanism from Carlos Cooks.
Right.
A lot of us don't hear about that man, Carlos Cooks. Because Carlos Cooks avoided the media. But he was feeding a lot of that information to Malcolm, because the Malcolm we saw at the beginning with Elijah Muhammad is not the same Malcolm at the end. He's a different Malcolm. He evolved psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's moving time, African people. Anyway, good brother, thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you so much,
thank
brother.
Thank you.
Brother Young, would you respond to that? Would you like to respond to brother?
Well, in short, I like what the end, what he said, is that, you know, action. And that's what I get out of this conversation. It goes back early with the very first guy spoke about just the state of one's mind. And this guy says action. To me, the idea of waiting to read a whole book and to look for idealism out of Africa when it's not what's necessary, because we've been doing that since God knows when. But there are lots of people who are doing lots of things right now that are Pan-African orientation. And you can read all the books you want, but in the process, they need to be supported.
Right.
So you can support them through money. You can support them through just attending one of the events for free. You can go get their book off the library for free. You can sign a petition for free. Do anything, but just be involved and be active. That's all.
Exactly. Brother Lush, any comments on Pan-Africanism?
Real quick, good evening, everyone, and good evening to your guests. I would really like to talk with Brother Watkins, if the time permits, a little bit later, because I'm too interested in the psychological component of things. You know, in the neighborhood that I live in, I have Mexican restaurants and Asian spas, et cetera, and it's just so interesting how you still get us melanated people to patronize those individuals. And so it begs the question, I kind of wonder, how did China get into Africa at all? Was there any attempt to not have them into the continent or into the countries that's represented there? You know, there's got to be a way that we see ourselves in people. And so it's no need for us to patronize. And we know it. We see it. It's there every day. And so how do we get ourselves into the kind and type of conditioning or reconditioning there is to be able to build from that? You know, I'm with Marcus on this. With regards to it's time to start doing. And we know we don't have to patronize Korean restaurants, Chinese restaurants run by Koreans. We know we don't have to do, but we do it, all right? We know we don't have to go to those other ethnicities and patronize them with our dollars. We see that each and every day. So I just was kind of wondering, you know, what is it going to take to change this ism, you know, that suffix being this state of quality of being, to be able to empower ourselves from this. And so hopefully I'll get a chance to talk with Brother Watkins and know a little bit more.
I'll make sure that he
gets
that number.
Well, let me ask you real quick, how about the soul food restaurants run by Koreans?
But we know this, brother. We know we don't have to patronize them.
But I'm saying that you mentioned all these other restaurants that they run. But I mean, how about the soul food restaurants run by Koreans? Not just the Korean restaurants run by Koreans or the Chinese restaurant by Koreans or the Thai restaurants run by Italians, but soul food restaurants where you go and get pig feet along with chow mein.
That's not their fault. That's your fault.
That's what I'm saying. You have to, that's what I'm saying. Action. My point is action. When you go to the store, just don't go in them. When your brother goes to the store, tell ask him not to go into it. Just take the Pan-African action thought and put into action. And I think that's the one the guys were saying very earlier on. And that's why I said he what he said, I could have said it. It's just taking the action, but, having the Pan-African.
But that's not the behavior of the Negro.
Huh?
That's not the behavior. That's not the behavior of the Negro. The behavior of the Negro is he want to get closer and closer to the daddy because that's what's promoted. He don't want to hear nothing about no Pan-Africanism. He don't want to hear nothing about kicking everybody out of Africa, shutting it down, and us doing what we have to do like Mountain. Nah, that ain't even in our psychology. Until we get to that point, we gotta always be in this strict bed. That's why I always say, if you don't understand this is a white man's country, then you're a fool, in my book, because I don't want to talk to you. Because you don't understand what your enemy or your problem is. And you're not looking for any type of serious solution or how to change the position that you're in. You're just talking. And the bottom line, it boils down to one thing. In the position that we're in right now, if we're not trying to develop ourselves in the African way, looking for sovereignty and being ready to die for it, then we ain't doing nothing but living and enjoying ourselves. So go about the business from there. Do your thing. You know what I mean? So you can't get mad at people who don't have no real understanding of what a vision is, an ideology, or any type of scope on what the world is really about. You got to just leave them alone and deal with those who have your same mindset. And that's our problem. You can't convert fools. They'll never convert into being what you wish for them to be. They're just going to guide you along and keep you from doing what you have to do. And until we figure that out, you're just going to be in the same position we're in. Every week we'll talk about certain things. Every week we'll have a vision on where we should be going. And when it's all said and done, we'll just die and nothing will be done. That's just the reality. But we don't want to accept that. We don't want to understand that. And we don't want to be in a position to where, given it is all these years Malcolm been dead, we still revere him as a deity, as the greatest thing that was ever given to us, but don't do nothing that he told us to do. And having, if all truth be told, elevated him to the point to where we shouldn't even have to talk about him no more.
Well, you know, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Brother Jay. I really do. But, I mean, seriously, though, you can't, it's kind of like maybe a little bit, it sounds like you're being a little defeatist. That's giving up. We can't give up. You got to keep going. I'm sure Garvey ran into that. Malcolm clearly ran into that when he was doing it, and all of the elders prior to them. So there's something that we have got to put into effect that can force that change in that way.
Like, hey, Brother, Dr. Rogers.
Go ahead.
Dr. Rogers, I'm not giving up at all. You know what I'm doing?
What's that?
I'm trying to educate the young ones that I'm in association with. I'm trying put
that's
that theory of warriorship into them so that they can do the necessary things in regard to studying and moving forward. Nah, man, I'm never going to give up.
Good, okay.
There's no reason to give up because the bottom line is until you understand one fundamental thing, that the creator of it changed his mind about it, the white man is your perpetual enemy, then, you know, come on, man. You know, anytime you can make that statement and you evolve 30 years later to feel that that's not true, but it's the most prevalent statement that one could understand, something wrong with you.
Right. Okay.
You know, issue.
Gotcha. All right. We're at that closing time. Brother Young, closing thoughts.
I saw this thought from the beginning that there are lots of people who are doing lots of positive things, and so the idea of Pan-Africanism isn't dead. And one of the people you mentioned who was the father, well, one of the people you mentioned in your article or the piece was Blyton. I forgot his first name. Elwood Blyton. And they also consider him a father of Pan-Africanism. But I'll tell you, his daughter has a new book out. It's called African Americans in Africa, A New History. Mm-hmm. So that's another person who I would say who is carrying on the work. And her name is Namita Blyton. The book is, you can check it out online too. And so people are still doing things, and all I can say is people can participate.
Right. Okay. Well, Brother Young, I appreciate having you on. Thank you so much. I'd definitely like to be able to call you again in the near future. Brother Alfonso, any closing words?
Yes. Like I say, we just keep seeing ourselves through the lens of our Creator and our ancestors, and we have to continue to recognize that we are winning, we're not losing, we are under attack, and we are an attack on so many different levels. But we have to remember, we still here, we still fighting. As long as we keep having conversations and people are building in their own spaces, if you're building it with your family, if you're building in the community, we are resisting. We have never surrendered this fight, y'all. So the in our conversation, we winning, y'all. They want to create the illusion like we losing, but we winning. So that's what I would say, man.
Okay. Well, thank both of you, brothers, and obviously you, our listening audience. We appreciate you being here every Tuesday. We'll be back next Tuesday at the same time. Have a wonderful and blessed week, and we'll see you there.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Good job.